Art comes from inside the artist, from the painter or composer's own experience. That's a given. But it's not every day the artist reaches in and pulls out something explicitly personal and presents it to the public. Our first guest did just that. Marini Goodyear is an artist in several genres, including words, and she used those words this fall to write an essay on her web blog called I Was a Promiscuous Teen, an open letter to all the men from my past. She lives in the Rogue Valley and is here in our studio to share the story with us. Marini Goodyear, thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Give us a little background first. You've been an artist for some time now.
Well, I've been an artist all my life, pretty much, but professionally just for the past couple of years. Mm-hmm. I've been writing my blog for the past 2 years, which is a relatively new art form for me.
But a lot of visual art in there too, right?
Yeah, I'm primarily an abstract painter and with ocean inspiration. I'm a surfer as well, so a lot of what I do tends to look like water, even if I don't intend it to.
A lot of water influences there then, yeah. You're interesting, though. You're an artist and a writer, but an artist with a business degree as well, is that right?
Yeah, so I did art all through my childhood, through high school, and then entered into a fine arts program at Boston University for college. But the program was very classical, and I felt pretty stifled there, and ultimately ended up with a business degree in hospitality and culinary arts. So
you can manage a hotel or restaurant, no problem.
I worked in restaurants for a very long time, yeah. Mm.
So how long has blogging been part of what you've been doing?
I've blogged regularly now for about 2 years. It was something that was recommended that I do from a business coach in order to create content for my website. That's how I started writing. And what I found was that I not only really enjoyed writing, it gave me an outlet to organize sometimes very confusing thoughts. I struggle a good bit with anxiety. If that goes unattended, it can lead to some depression. So through writing, I was really able to see the past that led that to happen and how to stop it a lot of times.
So putting yourself out in your writing is one thing, but, you know, reaching as deeply as you did, both inside yourself and into your past, is a big step. What led up to that?
Well, a lot led up to it. It was kind of a perfect storm. But over the past year, let's just say, there's been a lot in the media that's had to do with kind of rampant sexual assault with the Harvey Weinstein, with the U.S. Gymnastics team. There's been all of these things that have just kind of come to a head, and it was leading me to have some confusing thoughts about some daily struggles that I had with not feeling good enough, not feeling like I ever did enough. Feeling that I just could never really accomplish what I wanted to in my life, and having a lot of fear in my life. And then when the Kavanaugh hearings happened, it really just kind of cracked me open listening to Dr. Ford's testimony and realizing how much I resonated with what she was saying. It kind of sent me into a little bit of a tailspin.
So once you made the decision to write it, how long did it take to get the words out?
Not long at all.
Really?
Well, I say that. I had attempted to write this once before, and I was sitting at my desk writing, and I found myself just typing the words, just breathe, just breathe. And I really had trouble formulating exactly what I was trying to say. So I do what a lot of us do. I went and visited my therapist for some guidance, and she gave me the topic of this letter as an assignment. And when I sat down to write it, it flowed out so quickly. It was very natural, and it clarified so many things in my mind that I had just been unable to put words to.
Marini Goodyear is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an artist and a writer living in the Ashland area. Her open letter was called I Was a Promiscuous Teen, an open letter to all the men from my past. You can join the conversation on the Exchange as we talk about what Marini did and what the response to it has been. 800-838-3760 by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. It sounds like in the writing part you said was pretty fast, but then how much agonizing before you hit that button that says publish?
Well, step one just was to bring it back into my therapist's office and read it to her. And after I had read it out loud, I said, you know, I'm thinking about publishing this. And she said, I think you should if you're comfortable with it. And so I went home that day and just posted it. And I was terrified. I was shaking. My heart was pounding. I had tears running down my face. It was probably one of the scariest things I've ever done in my life. And I've jumped out of airplanes. I've done some.
You've surfed, yeah.
I do a lot of activities that have risk, but this was a frightening thing on a whole nother level. But almost immediately, the response was one of support, validation, and that so many people came forward saying, so many women were saying, are you sure that this isn't my story that you're writing? And every time one of those comments would come in, I would cry and cry and cry, just because, yes, it feels very good to know that I'm not alone. But at the same time, it's heartbreaking to know that there's so many women walking around with such shame throughout their lives because of these types of situations.
The walking wounded, I've heard people call them.
Oh, I've not heard that, but yeah, yeah.
Well, so let's talk about your story. There are a few things going on in your youth. You write of wanting love very much and abusing alcohol, which is a rather potent combination, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, one probably fed the other for a long time. I grew up in New Orleans, which is an alcohol culture. So that was just always around. And
not just the tourists, and I'm not being a joker here, but for living in New Orleans too, alcohol culture.
Oh, yeah, very much so. It's just the way things are there. I never questioned it. I never questioned the way I drank, the way other people drank. It definitely became a big coping mechanism for me. Which just, you know, perpetuated well into my 30s before I ended up just quitting drinking altogether.
You're frank about some of the things that happened. You know, the situations you found yourself in, waking up in certain places without pants, stuff like that, without being overly explicit. Even so, you know, they didn't need to be very explicit for you to remember them as you wrote them. And I just wonder how much you felt yourself cringing, crying, all of the above, as you wrote these things.
Oh, well, I cried and cringed for weeks leading up to writing it. And then writing it, you know, one thing that I've been very clear about in all my writing is that for me, and I believe for a lot of people, that speaking our truths is one of the most fundamental things you can do in order to move forward and grow. And so I've not really had a problem speaking my truths about these struggles that I've had in my life. It's who I am. It shapes me in every way. You know, we all have flaws. We all have things we struggle with. I think one of the big problems with anxiety levels in our society has to do with this, you know, image of perfection people feel they need to project in their lives. And these types of things just don't always go with that image of perfection. But I'm an imperfect person. And I feel just by speaking about it and talking about these things that have happened to me, you know, it gives me a true sense of freedom and hopefully can inspire that in others.
Let me read a little chunk of it here. You write, it is important for you to know, and again, this is an open letter to the men who took advantage of you. It is important for you to know that I was a terrified girl looking for approval. Is that sexy for you? To know that I was most likely full of doubt, self-loathing, and terror when we had sex? I sure hope not. In your defense, I will say that I never let you know. I never learned that it was okay to use my voice, and it's something that, as a 42-year-old woman, I am now having to deal with. Wow, yeah. You really reached right in there and pulled out the wiring, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. And it happened. When it did happen, it was a lightning bolt of, oh, this is where all this comes from. I never really knew that it was okay for me to use my voice to say no, to say I don't like what's happening, to say I feel uncomfortable, because to me that just didn't equal getting approval or getting a man to like me, or that it didn't make sense in my head that that's how it, you know, you would get respect from men. So in turn, I just let things happen pretty much my whole childhood.
Marini Goodyear is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an artist and essayist, and she wrote a humdinger of an essay called "I Was a Promiscuous Teen, an Open Letter to All the Men from My Past," told her deepest, darkest secret to the world, and is now hearing back from people who said, wow, I can really relate, and saying some other things as well. Join us on the exchange with your own thoughts, 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. In the letter, Marini, you make a request of the men. What is that?
To talk to their children, to their sons and their daughters. I did say, you know, in that paragraph that you read before that, you know, in their defense, I never said anything. It took my voice to communicate as well. And I think that that's a problem that we have in our society, is that girls don't feel like they can use their voice. And I asked these men in general, to talk to their sons about consent, about trust building, about, you know, just being a respectful partner. But also I asked them to talk to their daughters about it being okay to use their voice, to say no, to get out of situations that they might not even know why they're uncomfortable, but they are. And you don't need to know why, just leave the situation. And I think that in the past, these types of conversations between parents and their daughters especially has come from the mother. And that is an important person to talk to, of course. But hearing these things from the most important man in their life can have a huge impact on a small child, a girl who may not know that it's okay to communicate these things to men.
And you have a daughter yourself now, right?
I do. Yeah.
And did you talk to her about this before it happened or as it happened? The letter.
The letter itself. She was the only person I told that I was going to publish it. And I told her because I was worried about it falling into the hands of a teen bully who might, you know, slut shame her mom to her. And she is she's just such a strong, amazing girl, and she looked at me and she was like, nobody's going to do that, and if they do, then screw them. You know, that was her attitude.
Yeah.
And I was
she's strong.
She's amazing. And, you know, a lot of things in the letter I realized were things that I have talked to her about as she's grown up. At one point in the letter, I say, if your child is old enough to ask you the question, they're old enough for an honest answer. And I've always had that attitude with my daughter. And I do feel like parents candy coat things to their kids, especially when they ask questions that might be awkward and uncomfortable. And that is one of the things that I'm asking, is that stop, that it's okay for awkwardness to happen in conversations. And really, these things are only awkward because we make them awkward. Kids bounce back from answers, you know, like when you give a kid an honest answer, at first they might gasp and then they go, okay, you know, and that's been my experience, at least.
You mentioned that people were responding very soon after you posted the letter. How soon did you feel differently? Did you feel the proverbial great weight lifted off your shoulders?
Definitely throughout that first day, I felt it starting to lift. I was very humbled by the comments I was receiving. And of course, I shared this on my own personal social media page. And so it was a lot of my own friends just coming forth with support. But then it started getting shared. And within a very short period of time, it had made it clear across the world. It had been clicked on in every country in the world.
Wow.
And, I think that it's been clicked on like 200,000 times. And all of a sudden, the emails and the direct messages and the comments from strangers from all over the place, that's when I realized, wow, this has far greater reach than I ever thought it would, that people are really resonating this with, you know, both men and women. And the women were coming out of the woodwork, you know, just saying, thank you for, you know, these are the words that I've been trying to put to my own feelings. Thank you. And the men, oh, they were killing me with just come, you know, thank you for giving me tools to talk to my kids, you know. And so once I realized that you know, it wasn't my intention to have an impact on the world right now, you know. It really, this came from a place of self-healing. But after realizing that I'm not alone, that what I've done has actually helped people, and that I didn't have to hide anymore. That was the big thing. It was like every time my anxiety would start to creep in my day-to-day life, all I had to think was, wow, wait, what am I scared of anymore? Everything's out.
Yeah, so the one big thing you were hiding for all those years is out there now.
Right.
So you got a different life, don't you?
I do, yeah. And, you know, one, as cliche as it sounds, the one person I was hiding the most from was myself, you know, and that just poured over into every relationship in my life. So for me, now what's happening is I'm realizing that a lot of this anxiety is totally habitual.
And just because you've done it.
Just for years, mm-hmm. you know. But now when it starts to happen, it just takes a little, like, reminder of, like, wait, I'm not hiding anymore. This, you know, you're okay. And it goes away pretty quickly. And I'm not saying that I'm fixed or, right. you know, I still have my struggles. But it was a huge part of it.
So you got lots of great comments from around the world. You got some trolling too, it sounds like, though, based on your follow-up essay.
Yeah, I got some trolling. But the handful of nastiness, you know, the handful of nasty remarks that came can't hold a candle to the support and the amazing comments and correspondence that I've had.
You bring up the issue of responsibility in a follow-up post in which you say you used to feel 100% responsible for your teen promiscuity. How do you allocate that responsibility now?
You know,
Or is it not even an issue?
Well, I think it's an issue just because I think of how that should be allocated going forward, you know, like how – but it's an odd thing for me because – I didn't use my voice. I didn't, you know, I drank to excess. I put myself in really horrible situations. And I understand that I have a piece in all this. And, you know, but I also understand that things and what I started to understand, that there were things that happened to me at a very young age that kind of shaped my decision making and the alcohol abuse and things like that. So for me, it's still very much a back and forth between, you know, what is my fault and what is the fault I can put on others. But going into this, I'm not pointing fingers. I'm not saying, oh, this isn't my fault anymore. It's yours. Really all I want is for a discussion to go forward and for people to be mindful of how they talk to their kids. So hopefully this can just stop eventually.
You really did get a discussion going. The essay is called "I Was a Promiscuous Teen, an Open Letter to All the Men from My Past." Marinee Goodyear telling her deepest, darkest secret to the world on the web. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me.